It would be too much of an interference. Like I said, I'm here to guide you, not to interfere and make this easy for you. Mortals must earn success, not have it handed to them by the gods. But I will remain by your side for as long as you need me with you on your journey. But how can we trust you? Danielle asked, her sword still raised. How can we know that you're not pretending to be who you say you are, and that you're not actually some creature in Kerberos who is lying to us to gain our trust? Because no creature from Kerberos has had any contact with Earth in 3 millennia, he said. And of the ones who escaped, only 3 returned. The Harpy, Orthrus, and the Siren. But I know that Nyx came to you recently to warn you about Typhon's soul escaping Kerberos. She visited you on Earth after those 3 creatures I mentioned had returned. So I would have no way of knowing that unless I am who I say I am. A primordial deity sent here by Nyx to guide you through this dimension. Or you could have read our minds, I said. Or you could have already found Ethan and Blake and coaxed that information out of them.
I could have.
He spoke so calmly, as if the 3 of us weren't aiming weapons at him, ready to kill.
But I didn't. I'm Erebus, and I'm here to guide you through Kerberos. You can accept my help or not, but I would advise that you accept it, because without it, you will surely die. And I don't think you need reminding that each second we spend here discussing this is 1 second closer to the spring equinox.
He paused, allowing that to sink in.
But in the end, this is your decision, and I will not force my help upon you. So I will ask this of you once, and I advise that you choose wisely. Do you accept my help, or do you not?
I didn't lower my weapon, but I didn't shoot the arrow either. If this actually was Erebus, and if he was being truthful, we would be stupid to turn him down. After all, it was already apparent after our failed trek up the mountain that we wouldn't get far in Kerberos without being killed. But what if this wasn't Erebus? What if this was a monster that was pretending to be Erebus so he could gain our trust, bring us to who knows where, and trap us and torture us there? I was about to request to talk with the others alone when Chris started to play the golden lyre. Like Apollo had promised, Chris played like a pro, even though he didn't have experience on any instruments at all. His fingers clearly plucked each note, dancing across the strings to create music so perfect and beautiful that it brought tears to my eyes. If I didn't know any better, I would think that Apollo was playing the song himself.
If you want us to accept your help, then run as far away from us as you can manage and never speak of us or come near us again,
Chris said, the music accompanying his every word. I glanced at him, making sure to keep my arrow aimed at Erebus, shocked at what he was saying. What are you doing? I hissed, wanting to smack him for being such an idiot. I would have, if I wasn't holding on to my weapon.
Stop talking,
Danielle snapped at me.
Let Chris do what he needs to do.
I clamped my lips shut, surprised at her outburst. Apparently, both she and Chris had gone mad. Finally, Chris stopped playing the lyre. He lowered it and raised an eyebrow at Erebus, as if challenging the god to see his next move. I expected Erebus to turn around and run to the end of Kerberos, never seeing him or hearing from him again. Instead, he cocked his head at Chris and laughed.
Have you lost your mind?
He asked Chris.
Why would I do as you said if I'm here to help you? Which, for the record, I am.
Good job, Chris nodded. You passed the test.
I know.
Erebus smirked, as if he knew everything. Which, if he was a primordial deity, as he claimed, he likely did.
Apollo's golden lyre will convince anyone to do as they're told, unless they're an animal or a god. Since I'm a god, I'm immune to its effects. But if I were a monster here to trick you, I would be running for the hills, and the three of you would never see or hear from me again. Smart thinking,
he said, nodding at Chris.
I'm impressed.
Thanks,
Chris said sheepishly, swinging the lyre around his back.
I try.
It was a good idea, I said, feeling stupid for not figuring out what he was doing earlier. But the Titans are here in Kerberos, and they're all gods, so they would be immune to the lyre's effects too. How do we know that Erebus, or this god who claims to be Erebus, isn't actually a Titan?
The Titans are all trapped on the top of that mountain.
Erebus pointed to the mountain that we'd seen Blake and Ethan flying toward, the top of it hidden by a mass of dark storm clouds.
But more importantly, if I were a Titan, the three of you would be dead by now.
He has a good point.
Danielle lowered her sword, holding it to her side.
I think we should trust him.
He passed my test, so I trust him too,
Chris said.
Which leaves Nicole,
Erebus said. His dark eyes so intense that it felt like he could see straight into my soul.
So, child of Apollo,
he continued.
What will it be?
Chapter 12. I didn't move from my stance, holding my arrow steady and my gaze with Erebus's. Did I trust him enough to follow him through Kerberos? He was clearly a god. If he wasn't, he wouldn't have been immune to the effects of the golden lyre. And I had a gut feeling that he was right. If he were a Titan, he would have killed us by now. So no matter who he was, he didn't want us dead. At least, not immediately. And since it seemed like most creatures and monsters who resided on Kerberos did want us dead, it would be stupid to deny the help of a god who claimed that he wanted to help keep us alive. Plus, without our powers, we were weaker than ever. We needed his help. Fine. I lowered my bow, removing the crystal arrow and placing it back in my quiver. I grabbed the used arrow at my feet and put it away as well. I accept your help, too.
Wonderful,
he said, rubbing his hands together.
Now, as you already know, Ethan has taken Medusa's head to the top of the mountain. Your friend Blake is with him as well.
I tried to shoot Ethan while he was in the air, I interrupted. Do you know if the arrow hit him?
I'm not supposed to supply you with information that you should discover for yourself, but I suppose it won't hurt this one time,
he said.
No, your arrow did not reach Ethan, as he was already hidden by the clouds when you released the shot.
So he's still alive. I frowned, letting go of the hope I'd been holding on to that perhaps my arrow had hit its target.
That's for you to discover once you reach the top of the mountain,
Erebus said.
As you already found out, the quickest, most obvious path up the mountain is also the most deadly. If you had been stubborn and tried to continue, death would have been imminent. Even with the enchanted objects gifted to you by Apollo. But, as you suspected, that path is not the only way up the mountain. There's another way. Although given the direction you're currently heading, you're nowhere close to finding it. It's a safer, more meandering path that will take us through multiple realms of Kerberos. However, even though it's safer than the direct route, it's still far from safe. You will come across monsters and horrors that no longer exist on Earth. You will be exposed to some of the same terrors that monsters have experienced in Kerberos for thousands of years. You would not survive without me. But with me as your guide, you at least stand a chance. It will not be easy, but it's your only option if you wish to succeed on your quest. Are you ready to face the challenges ahead?
Yes. I nodded, since at this point, what choice did we have? I would face anything to save Blake. I'm ready.
I am too,
Chris said.
As am I,
Danielle said.
But I do have one question.
Ask away.
Erebus motioned for her to continue.
Ethan and Blake were taken up the mountain by dragons,
she said.
Wouldn't it be a lot faster if we could find dragons to fly us up to the top of the mountain as well?
Yes,
Erebus nodded.
It would. And that's precisely part of my plan. Although I didn't think it necessary for you to know until it happened. But since you asked so nicely, I suppose I can tell you now. Dragons reside midway up the mountain, and they're rather fickle creatures. The ones who retrieved Ethan and Blake were sent to this spot by Helios. You see, the dragons in question are Helios's solar dragons, who pulled Helios's chariot across the sky. They follow Helios's orders, or the orders of anyone working for Helios, because he is their master. With the portal weakened, Helios must have been able to get a message to the dragons to find Ethan and Blake and fly them up the mountain. The path we're taking up the mountain will lead us to the lair of the dragons. A ride from the dragons is the only way to the peak. And while dragons are inherently selfish creatures, they'll do anything for a price. Agreeing on that price will be for you and the dragons to negotiate.
We'll figure out something, Danielle said, her eyes blazing with determination. If a ride from the dragons is the only way to the peak, then we have to get them to cooperate.
I respect your willpower,
Erebus said.
But be warned that a deal with the dragons will require a sacrifice. However, we have quite a while until we reach them, and I'm sure you don't need reminding that time is of the essence. Shall we be on our way?
Of course, I said. And while I still wasn't positive that Erebus could be trusted, the three of us followed him back to the path through Kerberos. Chapter 13. Erebus led us across the cragged rocks and back onto the dirt path. I'd apparently been leading the group in the completely wrong direction. Since the path only led two ways, toward the mountain and back to the forest, I assumed Erebus would walk us along the rocks on the other side of the path. Instead, he turned around and followed the path back to the forest. In case you didn't notice, the mountain is that way, I pointed over my shoulder. Why are we walking away from it?
I know where the mountain is.
Erebus let out an agitated breath and rolled his eyes.
It's a mountain, for crying out loud. It's kind of hard to miss. But as I already told you, the route we'll be taking is a meandering one that will lead us through the realms of Kerberos. In case you don't understand what that means, the definition of meandering is...
Winding, Danielle interrupted, stopping to wipe some sweat off her forehead.
Twisty, bendy, curvy, an indirect course.
Precisely.
Erebus nodded at Danielle, his eyes gleaming with what seemed to be respect. Danielle just tossed her hair over her shoulder, her lips curved up into a small smile. I know what meandering means, I said, annoyed that both of them apparently thought I was missing a few brain cells. I just thought we would be meandering toward the mountain and not away from it.
We must first go away from the mountain in order to eventually head toward it,
Erebus said.
When you accepted my help, I thought that meant you trusted me not to lead you astray. Do you doubt me now?
There was a part of me that still questioned him, but since he was the one person in this hell dimension who seemed to want to help us, it would do me no good to tell him that now. No, I said. Of course not. Sorry. Chris slapped away another wasp, but from the pained look on his face, it hadn't been enough to stop him from getting stung.
Is there any way to stop these wasps from biting us? He asked.
That was probably the 10th time I've been stung, and it itches so bad that it's driving me crazy. I felt his pain. I also had multiple stings all over my body. And the more I scratched, the itchier they became. Still, while scratching made the bites worse, they burned so bad when I didn't scratch them that I couldn't resist giving in, even if the relief was only temporary. If Erebus had a way to make it stop, then I was all ears.
The flies and wasps are part of the torture inflicted by the Badlands, the realm in Kerberos between the mountain and the forest,
Erebus told us.
They will sting and bite you no matter what. You can lessen it by not irritating them by swatting at them, but it will not stop them completely. But as I'm sure you noticed, the flies and wasps disappeared once you started up the mountain. They will do the same once we enter the forest.
You mean that dark, creepy jungle of a forest that we saw when we stepped through the portal? I asked. We're going in there?
Yes,
Erebus nodded.
That's precisely where we're heading.
How's that supposed to be any better than the mountain?
The forest will not be an agreeable journey by any means,
he said.
But trust me, it's not deadly like the mountain. It won't cause you any physical harm. It's unpleasant, but not deadly.
How so?
Danielle asked.
You'll see when we get there,
he said.
There won't be any creatures to fight, so you needn't worry about that. I'll tell you more once we're closer. But you'll be fine as long as you remember this one important fact. Whatever you hear in the forest isn't real.
With that, he turned around and continued down the path. He tugged at the straps of the pack on his back, and I contemplated asking him what was inside, but I stopped myself. After all, Erebus was a god. If he wanted us to know what was in the pack, he would tell us. I also had a feeling that we'd annoyed him enough since first meeting him, and I didn't want to push his patience further. He continued to lead us down the path, and we followed, not saying a word. The only sounds were our footsteps, and the buzzing of the flies and wasps that bit and stung us no matter how little we swatted at them. The hot, muggy air created a layer of sweat over every inch of my skin. My hair was wet with sweat even after putting it up. I was getting thirstier and thirstier, but I held on to hope that we would find water soon. Until we did, there was no point in complaining. All we could do was continue on. The path crested over a hill, and as we ascended, I saw the trees in the forest waiting ahead. A dark haze surrounded the forest, and I couldn't imagine the horrors that waited for us within. But I pushed away my fear and focused on putting one foot in front of the other, reminding myself that each step forward was one step closer to Blake. We reached the top of the hill, and Erebus held his arms out, stopping us from proceeding. What? I asked. Why are we stopping?
Shh,
he said, facing forward and not looking at me.
Listen.
I doubted that my sense of hearing was any match for his godly one, but I did as he said anyway, closing my eyes so I could focus on the sounds around me. It didn't take long to hear the thunderous footsteps getting louder and louder by the second. They were quick. Whoever was making them was running. And they were so heavy that the ground vibrated under my feet. I opened my eyes as a big-boned, troll-like creature, at least three times the size of a human, ran out of the forest. He was followed by another, and then another. There must have been five of them in all. They each carried a wooden bat large enough to squash us like flies. And since they were following the path, they were heading straight toward us. Chapter 14. My heart jumped into my throat as the giants ran out of the forest, and I glanced around, looking for somewhere to hide. But since we were in a rocky, desert wasteland, there was nothing nearby that would give us cover. And since there were more of the giants than there were of us, we wouldn't be able to fight them off without our powers. Chris, I spoke louder, so he could hear me over the rumbling footsteps of the giants. Get your lyre ready.
Already on it, he said.
And sure enough, when I turned to look at him, I saw his lyre out and ready to play.
You won't need to worry about that,
Erebus said, his voice annoyingly calm.
Just watch.
Was he going to fight the giants for us? I thought he wasn't allowed to interfere like that. But hey, if he chose to do it, I wouldn't complain. We needed all the help we could get. So since he was a god, and I trusted him not to tell us to watch the giants if we actually needed to be running for our lives, I did as he said. After all, if he changed his mind and decided not to help us, Chris still had his lyre. He could use it to convince the giants to run in another direction and forget they ever saw us. But none of that was necessary, because instead of continuing toward us, the first giant hunched over and ran straight through the portal. 1 second he was there, and the next second he was gone. The rest of them followed his lead until none of them were left. Their pounding footsteps were gone, leaving an eerie silence in their wake. They all ran to Earth. I stared numbly at the empty path ahead of me. Straight to Kinsley. And none of us are there to stop them. Our families are there, and now they're at the mercy of those things. I whipped my head around to look at the others and pointed at the portal. We have to go back, I said. When we're back, we'll have our powers, and then we'll be able to kill those monsters.
No,
Chris said, holding his arm out to stop me.
We can't go back.
Yes, we can, I argued. It won't take long. We'll go through the portal, kill the giants, and then come back here to continue on. Those giants might be big, but they didn't look very smart. With our powers, we shouldn't have much trouble fighting them. I looked at Danielle, hoping she would agree with me. You're the final vote, I told her. Should we go fight the giants, or let them run free through our home? She looked back and forth between me and Chris, her expression guarded.
I don't know, she finally said. Our families are in danger, and I hate that. But there are protection spells around their houses, and they know to stay inside. If we lose time while fighting the giants, or worse, if anything happens to us while fighting them, we risk failing our entire mission.
She took a deep breath, sheathed her sword, and turned to Erebus.
You're the god and our guide, she said to him. What do you think we should do?
At least one of you has the common sense to ask for my opinion.
He spun his knife around. He must have gotten it from his bag, balancing it on the tip of his index finger. Somehow, it didn't draw blood. Once it finished spinning, he caught it with his other hand and continued.
I can't make your decisions for you, but I can let you know that the giants are not the only ones to escape. Word of the portal is spreading, and as it weakens, more creatures are able to pass through. The giants are not the first to pass through since you've arrived here, and they won't be the last.
He didn't need to say more for me to know that we couldn't go back through that portal. I think I knew that from the moment the giants escaped. I liked the idea of being able to go back and fight them, but if we went back to fight every monster that escaped through the portal while we were in Kerberos, we would likely never succeed in our mission. Plus, what if the lost time resulted in something terrible happening to Blake? We had to get to him as quickly as possible. Every second lost was another second he was at risk. I wouldn't be able to live with myself if he didn't make it out of this okay. Even if we go back for the giants, we can't go back for every group that escapes while we're here. I resolved, my heart dropping as I looked at the portal. If we go back for the giants, we'll be losing time here. It makes the most sense for us to continue on and get Medusa's head as quickly as possible. In the meantime, let's hope that Darius is making sure that our families stay safe.
I'm glad you're seeing this sensibly now, Danielle said. Remember, Apollo promised he would go to Darius's to warn him. Darius is smart, and he has Hypatia and Jason with him too. They'll do everything they can to keep the town safe.
I know, I said, although it didn't stop me from worrying about my family.
Does this mean you've made your decision?
Erebus asked. Yes. I stood straighter, thinking about Blake. He needed us. The world needed us to take back Medusa's head. We might be running away from a battle, but it was so we could win the war. We're ready to continue on our journey. Chapter 15. We continued walking along the path, past the portal, until reaching the forest. The footsteps of the giants were pressed into the dirt, and I placed my foot inside one of them, curious about how it would size up. The giant's foot was triple the size of mine. If we'd been walking along the path minutes earlier, we would have come head to head with the giants, who would have likely crushed us in their sprint for the portal. We'd been lucky this time. But I knew better than to think that the luck would continue. When facing the next monster, would we just run away like we had when coming across the Nemean lion? I tightened my grip on my bow, feeling like a coward as I remembered how we'd turned and ran. We'd been relying on our power since the night of the comet. The thought of fighting without them was terrifying. Hopefully, Apollo's gifts would help us through whatever battles were to come. Erebus stopped at the forest. I stopped behind him, craning my neck to look up at the towering trees. Their trunks were wider than a car, and I tried to see to the top of them, but I couldn't. They grew up into the clouds. For all I knew, they were as tall as the mountain itself. Tendrils of fog reached out from the forest, as if beckoning us to enter so it could wrap itself around us and never let us go. Despite the stifling heat, goosebumps rose along my arms. Every instinct in my body warned me to back away and run in the opposite direction. "Are you sure this is the best way for us to go?" I asked Erebus, taking a step back. "The forest seems kind of..." I paused, searching for the right word. "Scary" and "creepy" came to mind first, but they weren't strong enough to get across my feelings.
"Ominous?"
Danielle finished the sentence for me. "Yeah," I nodded, "exactly. And we already know the giants were in there. What if there's something worse inside?"
"You're right to be afraid of the Whispering Forest,"
Erebus said.
"But the path through the forest is the only path that will take you up the mountain, besides the direct route you already tried. And we all know how that ended up. So I trust you won't be trying that again. But I assure you, there's nothing in that forest that will harm you. Physically, at least."
"But it'll harm us in other ways?"
Chris asked.
"It can,"
Erebus said.
"Once you've entered the forest, it's easy to get lost inside. Many do. Some creatures wander in the mist for years, or centuries. When, or if, they emerge, they're never the same. The forest breaks their minds."
I shivered, not liking how that sounded.
"Luckily, the three of you have me as your guide,"
he continued.
"It's about a 3-hour walk from here to the other side of the forest, and we'll hold hands and make a chain as we walk to make sure that no one gets lost. During that time, you must remember, the wind will whisper through the trees,
preying on your fears. But none of it is real. No matter what, you must remember that.
Got it. Chris nodded.
Is there anything else we should know?
You won't be able to see or hear each other in the forest,
Erebus said.
So whatever happens, hold on to each other's hands and don't let go.
And if something happens and we do get separated? I asked. How will we find each other if we can't hear or see each other?
That won't happen,
he said. But if it does, I pressed, what then?
Then you have two options. Get lost in the forest, or get a hold of yourself and follow the path to the exit. As long as you remember that nothing you hear is real, you shouldn't get separated at all. But if you do get separated, then for your sake, and for the sake of everyone living on Earth, I hope you're strong enough to remain on the path. Because once you wander off the path, you'll be nearly impossible to find. And if you're lost, we do not have the time to spare to go back for you. Understand?
Yes, I said, somber with the weight of his words. I understand. I looked back into the forest, the fog so thick that it was like a ghost calling to me, beckoning to me. What was it going to say to me? What was so horrible that it could drive even the most dangerous monsters crazy for centuries? Fear crept up my spine, but I straightened, pushing it away. No matter what happened, I couldn't trust anything I heard in there. Blake was counting on me. The world was counting on me. And I refused to let them down. Chapter 16.
I'll be the caboose, Chris volunteered, glancing at Erebus. Since you'll be in front, I figure we've got to protect the girls.
You are no less vulnerable than they are,
Erebus said.
But as you wish.
He reached for Danielle's hand, and soon the four of us were linked together. Erebus leading the way, then Danielle, then me, and Chris in the back. We were all sweaty because of the heat, but Chris's palm was much more slippery than Danielle's. I guessed that despite his attempt to sound brave, he was just as scared as I was. But it would embarrass him if I mentioned it, so I said nothing. Erebus took his first steps into the forest, and we had no choice but to follow him into the mist. The first tendril of fog licked my fingers, and I was surprised by how silky and cool it was, a welcome break from the smothering heat. I made my way fully into it, contentment seeping into my skin as it covered me completely. My insect bites, which had itched so much that they burned, cooled down in the fog until the burning was gone. It was as if the bites had never existed at all. My hunger and thirst was gone as well. The fog was thinner near the ground, so I could see my feet and the path. Above that, I couldn't see more than a few inches around myself. But I didn't care. This was the most comfortable I'd been since coming through that portal. Perhaps this was why creatures entered the forest and never returned. They realized how comfortable it was here, and they made a choice. As the peaceful calm rolled over me, it wasn't hard to understand why they had no desire to leave. Why did you say this was going to be hard? I asked Erebus. The 3 hours we'll be in this forest will probably be the best ones in Kerberos. Besides the moment I see Blake again, of course. I smiled, thinking of our upcoming reunion. I couldn't wait to run into his arms and kiss him again, and finally tell him that I loved him. No one answered my question, and I opened my mouth to repeat myself when I remembered we wouldn't be able to hear each other in the forest. Erebus never told us why, but I guessed it had something to do with the fog. Not being able to see anything or talk to anyone for 3 hours was going to get boring pretty quickly. But a little bit of boredom wasn't something to complain about. compared to everything else we'd seen in Kerberos so far. At least wasps weren't trying to sting us, and beasts weren't trying to kill us. We continued walking for what felt like an hour, although in the fog, it was hard to tell how much time had passed. Then a breeze rustled through the leaves. It was soft at first, but it got louder and louder, like whispers whistling in the wind. The whispers were all around me, but I couldn't hear what they were saying. I squeezed Chris and Danielle's hands, relieved when they squeezed back. I might not be able to talk to them, but I understood the message they were trying to get across. They heard the whispers too. But we had each other. We would be fine. As we continued, the whispers got louder. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but they were like insects, crawling into my ears and lodging themselves into the crevices of my brain. They filled my head, whistling and hissing until my mind felt like it might explode from the force of it all. I wanted to let go of Chris and Danielle's hands and lodge my fingers into my ears to dig out the voices. But I didn't. I held on tighter. Erebus had warned us that nothing we heard in the forest would be real. The whispers weren't actually in my head. They were figments of my imagination. Unfortunately, simply acknowledging that they weren't real didn't make them go away. They just got louder and louder, until each little whispering voice surrounded me, closing in on me until I couldn't hear my own thoughts above their hissing. "Shut up!" I yelled into the fog. My friends might not be able to hear me, but maybe whatever lurked in the forest could. "Get out of my head!" I didn't think the whispers would listen to me. But they stopped, as if someone had hit the power button to shut them off. And all was silent.
Chapter 17. "Nicole?" a familiar voice asked, barely louder than a whisper. "Is that you?"
"Becca?" I stopped walking, searching for where her voice could be coming from. But Danielle pulled me along, forcing me to continue. I remembered what Erebus had said earlier. "Whatever you hear in there, it isn't real." The voice I just heard might sound like Becca, but it wasn't her. It was the forest playing tricks on me.
"Nicole?"
my sister asked again, her voice trembling.
"Where are you going? Don't leave me here, please."
I pressed my lips together and continued on, saying nothing. Whatever this thing was that was pretending to be my sister, I refused to play its game. But even though I didn't respond, it kept talking. Repeating my name, asking where I was, begging me to come and find her. "To find it," I reminded myself. This thing wasn't Becca. Becca was back in Kinsley, safe in our house. There was no way that she was here. She couldn't be here. But even though I said nothing, that didn't stop it from talking.
"Why are you ignoring me?"
she asked. And given her tone, I could imagine Becca's pouty expression when she said it.
"I know that you're special now since you have those powers, but you're still my sister. Why won't you come help me? Do I mean nothing to you now, since I'm not special like you are? Don't you love me anymore?"
"You're not my sister," I yelled, unable to stay silent for a second longer. My breaths were heavy, but I steadied myself, trying to regain control. All I wanted was for this thing to stop talking to me. "I don't know what you are, but you're not Becca."
"You're wrong," she whispered.
"I'm not wrong."
"Are you really going to leave me here?"
she asked.
"Lost in this forest? I'm scared, and I'm cold, and I want to go home. Don't you want to help me?"
"You're trying to trick me." I grit my teeth together, determined to make this creature shut up.
I know better than to fall for it.
What if I told you something that only I would know?
I said nothing, because this thing wasn't my sister, and nothing it said would make me believe otherwise.
Remember that time a few years ago when I broke Mom's teapot in the dining room?
She said, even though I hadn't asked her to continue.
I felt so bad about it. I couldn't stop crying. But you cleaned it up and threw it in the neighbor's trash can. You said Mom would never notice. And you were right. She didn't notice. Until we were packing up to move to Kinsley. She asked what happened to that teapot. And we both acted like we had no idea what she was talking about. We were so calm about it. Until we ran into your room, shut the door, and burst out laughing.
I couldn't help smiling at the memory. Becca and I didn't have much in common, but we did occasionally have moments that brought us together. We still shared a smile whenever we walked by the replacement teapot in our dining room now. We were the only ones who knew what had happened to the original, and since we'd promised to never tell anyone about it, we were the only ones who would ever know. So how was she telling me this story now? Was I right to have worried that my family might have left the safety of the house? Did one of the creatures from Kerberos find Becca and force her through the portal? She'd been kidnapped before. It could happen again. Had she been brought to Kerberos and dropped into the forest?
A monster captured me and brought me here,
Becca continued, as if she could read my mind.
I was terrified. But I remembered when the other monster brought me to the cave, and how you saved me. You'll save me again, Nicole, won't you? You won't leave me here alone.
I looked around as Danielle pulled me forward, searching for where Becca's voice was coming from. All I could see was the white fog, surrounding me, blinding me. Where are you? I called into the forest. Maybe I could get the others to come with me to find Becca. Once we got out of here with her, and I explained to them what happened, they would understand that I had no choice. I had to save her. Tell me where you are.
I don't know, she whimpered. It's foggy, and I'm scared. Come find me, please. I'll die in here if you don't.
She sounded so frightened and helpless. I knew we should have gone after the giants and killed them to make sure our families were safe. If I'd stood my ground more, we would have done that. Once the giants were taken care of and we knew everyone was safe, we could have come back to Kerberos to continue our mission. Instead, I'd been weak. It was my fault that Becca had been kidnapped. I had to find her. Yes, our mission was important, but I refused to abandon my family. I tugged on Danielle, trying to get her to stop walking. But she gripped my hand tighter, pulling me forward. I couldn't let her continue. I didn't know where Becca was, but she was here somewhere. If we kept walking, we would lose her. So I yanked on Danielle's hand again, harder this time, determined to make her stop. Instead of listening to me and stopping, she curled her thumb inward and dug her nail into my palm, deep enough to draw blood. I screamed and tried to wrench my hand out of hers, but then I stopped struggling, because with the pain came a sudden clarity. This thing in my head wasn't Becca. If Becca were close enough to talk to me, to whisper to me, she would have ran to me and found me herself. I held Danielle's hand tighter, hoping to communicate to her that she got through to me, and continued walking forward. I took a deep breath, centering myself. I had to stay focused. I'd let the whispers invade my mind once. I refused to let them do it again.
Nicole?
The voice asked, softer this time.
Aren't you coming to find me?
You're in my head, I yelled into the void. I don't know what you are, But you're not Becca. You might be able to access my memories, but I won't fall for your tricks. What we're doing is too important. Blake's counting on me. My family's counting on me. The world is counting on me. And I won't let them down. The whispers could say whatever they wanted, but they couldn't hurt me. And so, feeling more confident than I had since first stepping into the forest, I relaxed and kept walking. Then Chris suddenly slipped his hand out of mine, and he was gone. Chapter 18. I reached for Chris, but he was nowhere to be found, and Danielle continued to pull me forward, unaware of what had just happened. I couldn't leave Chris out there, so I did the first thing that crossed my mind. I used my free hand to jab Danielle below her ribcage. The instant she lost her breath, I pulled my hand out of hers and turned around, screaming Chris's name. Of course he couldn't hear me, so I held both my arms out and ran back from where we'd come, hoping to bump into him. It had only been seconds. He couldn't have gone far. I stayed on the path, since if I left it, I might never find my way back. Hopefully he'd stay on it, too. If he hadn't, he would be lost forever.
Nicole?
Another whisper entered my mind. Blake? I asked, even though I knew it wasn't actually him. He was no more real than Becca.
Who else?
I could practically hear the smirk in his tone. But I saw the dragons fly you up the mountain. I wasn't sure if I said it more for his benefit or for mine, to remind myself that this wasn't really Blake.
Yeah, they did, he said. And I've got to say, being flown by dragons was pretty cool. We need to try it sometime. But don't you know me well enough by now to know that I could fight off Ethan on my own? I was coming back down the mountain to find you. That's how I got here. But it looks like you found me first.
I wished it were true so badly that it hurt. I was cold and alone and scared. This mission would be so much easier if I had Blake by my side. I wanted him to be here, and I had no doubt that the forest knew that too. That's why I was hearing him now. But I refused to stop looking for Chris. The fog, the whispers, the forest. I didn't know what kind of creature this was, or what kind of magic it had, but it could somehow get into my mind. It wanted to keep me here. And to do that, it had to separate me from my friends. Technically, it had already succeeded. But I refused to give up hope. I would find Chris and get out of here. And maybe, just maybe, I could use the forest's desires to my advantage. Blake, I said, wanting to hear his voice again. I missed you.
You have no idea how much I missed you.
Despite the cold, hearing him speak made warmth rush through my veins.
I fought off Ethan and ran through this hell world to find you. That's how much I love you, Nicole. Enough to run through hell for you. I love you more than you could ever know.
You love me? My voice cracked, and a tear rolled down my cheek.
Of course,
he said.
And since you entered hell for me, I don't think I'm going on too much of a limb to think that you love me, too.
Yes. I tried to wave the fog away, needing to find him. But I had no idea where his voice was coming from. It was everywhere and nowhere all at once. Of course I love you. I've loved you since Greece, and I was so terrified that I would never get a chance to tell you.
You don't need to worry anymore,
he said.
Because I'm with you now, Nicole.
Where? I asked, my heart leaping into my throat. I'm trying to find you, but I'm lost and I can barely see. Tell me where to go.
Turn right, and keep walking straight,
he said.
We'll be together soon, Nicole. I promise.
Every molecule in my body wanted to turn right and run into Blake's arms. Instead, I jabbed my thumbnail into my palm, digging into the exact same spot Danielle had cut into earlier. A fresh wave of pain shot through my arm, cleansing my mind of the hypnotizing whispers. Before they could take hold of me again, I turned left and I ran. Chapter 19. I crashed into Chris a few seconds later. Chris, I exclaimed, even though he couldn't hear me. Knowing I had to work fast, I reached for his shoulder and dug my nails into the place where the fox had scratched him. His chest vibrated with the force of his scream. Seconds later, he was still. But at least he wasn't fighting me, which must have meant that the pain shocked him out of the hypnosis caused by the whispers. I reached for his hand, ready to guide him back to the path. But he grabbed my hand and turned it over, tracing something onto my palms. Letters. First a T, and then a Y. Thank you. I did the same, tracing a Y onto his palm, and then a W. You're welcome. I linked my hand into his, holding tightly this time. I wouldn't let us separate again. I'd tricked the whispers once, but now they knew to expect it from me. I wouldn't be able to trick them again. All I could do was make sure Chris and I stayed on the path, and that we kept walking until we reached the end of the forest. As we continued, I heard my mom, my dad, Kate, and even Apollo, all of them trying to convince me that they were here and that I needed to come find them. But I kept my fist clenched as I walked, digging my nails into my flesh to remain focused. Finally, the path ended. I stepped out of the fog, Chris emerging after me. Nicole, Chris. Danielle ran up to us, wrapping her arms around us and pulling us into a big hug. I knew you would make it out of there. Erebus said he wouldn't, but I told him he was wrong and forced him to wait with me. She pulled out of the hug and stepped back, studying both of us. What happened back there? She asked me. You were trying to break away from me, and I pinched you to bring you back to focus. I thought it worked. Then you punched me and ran off. Sorry about that, I said. Chris broke away from me, and he weren't letting me go. So it was the first thing I could think to do to break free.
And you found him that easily?
Erebus asked. I wasn't sure when he'd approached us, but his arms were crossed, and he watched us with interest. Yeah, I said, and I quickly explained how I'd let myself believe the whispers, only to pinch myself to remind myself to go against them at the last minute. I figured that since they could get in my head, the only way to make them trust me was to make myself believe what they were telling me.
Smart,
Erebus said.
I didn't expect that from you. It must have taken a lot of willpower to break away from the delusion on your own. Good job.
I wasn't sure whether to take that as an insult or a compliment, so I said nothing. Instead, I turned back to Danielle. How did you know to pinch me to force me to get back into focus? I asked her. I tried to break away from Erebus at one point, and that's how he brought me back, she said. It worked on me, so I figured it would work on you, too.
You couldn't have told us about that before we entered the forest? I asked Erebus.
I'm only your guide,
he reminded us.
I was hoping you would figure it out for yourselves. But when Danielle tried getting away from me, I did it without thinking. Once it was done, I couldn't take it back.
Don't sound too happy about saving my life, Danielle said, rolling her eyes.
And the lives of Nicole and Chris, since they wouldn't have known to do that if it hadn't been for you doing it to me first.
What's done is done,
Erebus said.
The important thing is that we made it through the forest without losing anyone.
Yeah, I said, not wanting to think about what would have happened if I hadn't found Chris. Or if I'd ended up stuck in that fog, too. How long would I have wandered around aimlessly, talking with my loved ones and searching for them even though they weren't anywhere to be found? I wanted to ask Chris what he'd heard that made him run away, but I stopped myself. Because what we'd each heard was personal. I wasn't ready to share my experiences with them, and it wouldn't be right to push them to share theirs with me. At least not so soon after it happened. So I said nothing, instead remembering what it had felt like to hear Blake's voice. To hear him say that he loved me. It wasn't real, but I wanted it to be. I wanted it so badly that it hurt. The others were quiet as well. Were they also remembering what they'd heard in the forest?
Do you all need to rest?
Erebus asked, breaking the silence.
As a god, it's easy to forget that humans need to sleep sometimes.
No, I said, since hearing Blake's voice had brought about a new wave of energy to find him. Danielle and Chris said they were able to keep going as well.
Good,
Erebus said, turning to continue on the path.
Because the Whispering Forest was just the beginning. We have a lot of ground to cover before reaching the mountain.
Chapter 20.
We didn't have long to walk until reaching our next destination, a river. The moment the path curved and we saw the water, I sprinted to the edge, cupped the water in my hands, and took a long drink. Chris kneeled beside me, doing the same thing. The water was sweet and delicious, like it had come straight from a glacier itself. It was better than any water I'd had on Earth. Which surprised me, because wasn't this a prison world? It didn't seem very prison-like to have such delicious water. But it was here, and I was thirsty, so I wasn't going to complain. I drank and drank until I couldn't fit any more in my stomach. And then I sat back, using my sleeve to wipe the water from my chin.
This water's amazing,
Chris said, finishing up a handful of it and diving in for another.
If we bottled it up and sold it on Earth, we could make millions.
If only we didn't have to seal the portal, I joked, feeling much better now that I didn't feel like I was going to pass out from thirst. I turned around, wondering why Danielle wasn't joining us, surprised to see her walking slowly toward us with Erebus. Aren't you thirsty? I asked her. This water is amazing. She pressed her lips together and glanced at Erebus. When she turned back to me, she looked like she wanted to tell me something, but like she didn't know how to start. Before I could open my mouth to ask her what was wrong, dizziness slammed into my head. My vision hazed over, and everything went dark.
Chapter 21.
I woke up in the cave, staring straight into the glowing yellow eyes of the harpy. My hands rested on the back of a chair where Becca was seated, her wrists and ankles binding her down.
The choice is yours,
the harpy said, its eyes on me.
If you refuse to hand over the book, the energy of six witches will make my friends in there very happy.
It pointed a talon at the muddy door, the portal to Kerberos, and cackled. I blinked a few times, centering myself. I remembered this happening back in January, the week when we first got our powers. How did I get here? What was happening? The last thing I remembered, I was drinking water from a river in Kerberos. What had the water done to me? Had it sent me back in time? Danielle stepped forward and stuck her chin in the air.
What's to stop you from throwing us in there even if Nicole gives you the book?
She asked. I looked at her, trying to see if she noticed that anything was off. But she simply stared at the harpy,
waiting for it to answer. The others did the same, including Kate. She stood to the back, near the cave wall, and I gasped at the sight of her. I didn't think I would ever see her again. I hoped we would be able to break Medusa's curse, but who knew how long that would take, if we were even able to succeed. But here she was, as if nothing had ever happened to her. Maybe that was the reason I was here, to save Kate.
Just my word,
the harpy answered Danielle's question and smiled to the best of its ability, given that it had a beak instead of a mouth.
Because that's so reliable, Becca sneered.
The harpy raised a talon and slashed it across Becca's face, blood spritzing all around her. I gasped, my heart sinking into my stomach. Because that wasn't supposed to happen. But Becca's screams made it clear that it had happened, and she hunched over, her agonizing wails echoing through the cave. I ran around the chair, placing my hands under Becca's chin, and forcing her to look up at me. The moment I did, I wished I hadn't. The harpy's claw had slashed diagonally across my sister's face, along one of her eyes, slicing her nose in half, and deforming one side of her mouth. Her eyeball had popped, the gooey remains of it dripping down her cheek. My beautiful sister looks like a monster. It'll be okay, I told her, barely able to find my voice. I can fix this. I reached forward to heal her, but before I could, the harpy pushed me to the side. I crashed to the ground, my breath knocked out of me. Before I could process what was happening, the harpy picked up Becca's chair and threw it across the room, sending it hurtling over the nearby cliff. My sister's screams echoed through the air. I heard a crash, and she was silent. No! I screamed, running to the side of the cliff. I looked down, collapsing into sobs, at the sight below. Becca's head had crashed into a stalagmite. Her skull was crushed to a pulp, her remaining eye staring emptily up at the ceiling. The sight of her broken body chilled me to the bone. A minute ago, she was fine. Now she was gone. I would never be able to see my sister or talk to her again. How was this happening? I remembered this day. This wasn't how this was supposed to end. Becca was supposed to be fine. She couldn't be dead. She just couldn't be. But there she was, crushed to death at the bottom of a pit. And there was nothing I could do to save her. Something grabbed my arm, the harpy's claw, and she forced me around to face her.
Don't be too sad about your sister, she snarled. Because you'll be seeing her soon.
She reached her other claw forward and dug it into my chest. I screamed, the pain so unbearable that I couldn't think or move or breathe. She pulled her hand out of my chest. I saw my bloody heart dripping in her claw. And everything went dark.
Chapter 22.
When I opened my eyes, I was back on the yacht in Greece, holding what was left of Chef's arm, after he'd been mauled by Scylla. He glanced down at what was left of his arm and scowled.
You're supposed to be a healer, he said, yanking the remaining stump back to his side. What good are you if you can't fix this?
What's happening to me? My chest burned with pain, but when I looked down at it, it was fine. No hole where my heart would have been. Why am I here?
What's happening to you?
Chef asked, his features twisted in rage.
Are you crazy, girl? You're the one who is supposed to fix what happened to me.
He waved his stump in the air, glaring at me as if I'd ripped his arm off myself. Blake wrapped his arms around me, and I sunk into his embrace and closed my eyes. Sobs racking through my body. At least Blake was back here with me. That was one comfort in this huge mess.
She saved your life,
Blake said to Chef, his chest vibrating as he spoke.
If Nicole wasn't here, you would have bled out and died.
Stop talking, boy,
Chef said, and then Blake choked a heart-dropping, gurgling sound coming from his throat as he gasped for air. Warm liquid dripped down my cheek, and Blake's body went limp around me, collapsing to the ground. His blood was everywhere, in my eyes, on my face, in my hair, on my hands. It poured out of his neck from the gash that Chef had sliced through his throat. I reached for him to heal him, but Chef dropped his knife and pulled me back, his arm wrapped around me so tightly that he crushed my ribcage.
No, I screamed, thrashing against Chef's hold. Let me go. You have to let me heal him.
I kicked and screamed, but he was stronger than me. I was trapped, watching helplessly as the life drained out of Blake's eyes. His fingers twitched a few times, and he was still.
Blake, I said, tears streaming down my face when I said his name. He couldn't be dead. He had to hold on. I couldn't lose him, too. How was I supposed to go on when I was losing everyone I loved? I could have healed him, I yelled, still trying to fight Chef's iron grip. Why didn't you let me heal him?
You wanted me to let you heal your boyfriend when you couldn't even heal me?
His hot voice flooded into my ear.
Not a chance. You're worthless, girl. And worthless things don't belong on this boat.
He threw me to the ground, picked up the bloody knife, and the point of it was the last thing I saw before it slammed through my skull. Chapter 23. When I opened my eyes next, I was in the Hydra's cave, staring at Rachel's swollen, blackened body.
No.
I pulled my hand off her arm, not wanting to touch her.
Not here. I don't want to be here. I can't take any more of this. Please, make it stop.
My head pounded in the spot above the bridge of my nose, where Chef had stabbed me, and I rubbed at it, trying to make the pain go away.
What are you talking about?
Someone asked from next to me. Ethan. He stared at me, his eyes crazed and hollow.
Can you save my sister?
I stared back at him, saying nothing. I'd already gone through this once. I couldn't do it again. I couldn't tell him that I'd failed. That I was the reason why his sister was gone.
I'll take your silence as a no.
He raised something above his head. The Hydra's fang, dripping with tar-like poison, and rammed it through my heart. I struggled for one last gasping breath, and then Ethan smiled wickedly, twisted the fang, and everything went dark. Chapter 24. This time when I opened my eyes, I was running down my street in Kinsley. My heart burned where Ethan had stabbed it with the Hydra's fang. But all I could think was, keep running. You have to get home. This was different than the other times. Those times, I'd woken up during something that had happened to me in the past. Where I was now, running down my street, trying to get home, wasn't something from my past. This felt real. Then again, the first few times I'd woken up had felt real too. For all I knew, they were real now. Could reality as I knew it have been changed? No, I thought, because that would mean that Becca was dead, and Blake was dead, and that I was dead. Which I clearly wasn't, because here I was, running down my street in Kinsley. Had something happened to me in Kerberos? Something that made me black out, have gruesome visions, and wake up having no idea what I'd done between then and now? I had no idea. All I knew was the one thought repeating in my mind. I had to get home. Everything in Kinsley looked exactly how it had been when I'd left, down to the muddy snow and piles along the sides of the street. Finally, I reached my house, and I ran up to the porch, swinging the door open and hurrying inside. A dismembered arm waited for me in the entranceway, flung onto the floor like discarded trash. The silver watch on the wrist was unmistakably my stepdad's. The man who had raised me, who felt more like my dad than Apollo himself. I keeled over and threw up. Once my stomach had emptied, I ran through the living room, screaming for my parents. People could live without arms. Chef had lost his arm, and he'd survived. Just because I'd seen my dad's arm didn't mean he was dead. But then I entered the kitchen, where more limbs dangled from the ceiling. My dad's other arm, both of my mom's arms, and both of their legs, hanging with rope, dripping blood into puddles on the tile floor. I screamed, falling onto my knees at the sight of the morbid scene before me. This couldn't be happening. Hadn't there been a protection spell around the house to keep monsters from entering? How could one of them have gotten through? This couldn't be real. I shut my eyes, trying to make it all disappear. But when I opened them again, nothing had changed. My kitchen was a slaughterhouse. I had to get out of here. I ran back to the living room, and that was when I saw them. Two heads, placed on the coffee table like decorative ornaments. My mom and my dad. I screamed again and collapsed on the floor in heaving sobs, covering my eyes as I cried. My parents were gone. I couldn't think. I couldn't move. All I could feel was the bone-chilling realization that I would never be able to see them again. How was I supposed to live through this? It wasn't fair. Why was I alive and they were dead? More importantly, who did this to them? And why? Then someone opened the door, and it slowly creaked open until hitting the wall. I looked up and saw a figure in a black cloak standing in the doorway, his features covered in shadow. He pulled out a gun and aimed it at my head. The bang of the shot threw me back into the darkness. Chapter 25. I woke up to a thunderous crack and gasped for air. The horrible scenes I'd just lived through flashed through my mind. Images of all the people I loved, dead. My heart raced, the chill of loss pounding into my bones as my eyes fluttered open. I was lying down in the center of a small boat, but made all of wood. Erebus and Danielle stared down at me, both of them sitting on a bench along the back. Danielle casually drank from a bottle of water, and Erebus manned the oars. What just happened? I pushed myself up to sitting position and rubbed my temples, trying to force the images I'd seen out of my mind. I glanced next to me, where Chris was still asleep, his blank expression showing nothing of whatever he was experiencing in his mind. Hopefully it wasn't anything as horrible as what I'd gone through just now. Now that I was awake, it was clear that all of those terrifying, gory scenes had been dreams, but they'd felt so real when they were happening. I'd never been prone to nightmares. Was that what they were like? I shuddered, trying to shake the horrors away. I would never laugh at my sister again the next time she woke up, screaming and scared from a dream.
You drank from the river of dreams.
Erebus unzipped his bag and pulled out a full water bottle, tossing it to me.
I wish you'd told me you were thirsty,
he said.
I would have offered that to you if I'd known. And those are automatically refillable, by the way. They'll never go empty.
He should have offered us water up front instead of letting us assume he had some in his bag. But I didn't want to complain to a primordial deity.